All right, you're on the Arms Room with Glenn, and no John. John had to leave early this morning to go head up to SHOT Show because, I don't know, there was some kind of tomfoolery going on. He just had to be there.
But don't worry, everyone. I'm still here.
But Mason is still here. Thank goodness. So we're good. We're coming to you from the official Wilderness Tactical Studio. Remember our gear scholarship still going on. Though right now we're booked out through like February. But if you are involved in law enforcement, you are involved in any kind of military organization, you're involved in any kind of youth shooting sports, or you just really think that you're a good candidate, which is mostly what we've been getting lately, then you can email us info@trainingaz.com and we will make sure that you get at no cost to you some gear from Wilderness Tactical, whether it's belt or bags or pouches or whatever, and very easy requirements on what you got to do with them. Today's show brought to you by HexMag. Make sure you check them out, hexmag.com. Looking forward to seeing them tomorrow at SHOT Show. They got a lot of cool products coming out that we talked about on our show. Is that last month, Mason?
Yeah, like 2 weeks ago, if that was still.
Yeah, I think last year, maybe.
Yeah, last year.
I don't know. Anyways, a lot of cool products coming out from them, so make sure you check out hexmag.com. Remember, we still have people overseas, people. It is a new year, and they went through the holidays just like we did, only they typically didn't get to do it at home. So remember, we've still got people overseas. If you're still looking for someone to send a care package to, make sure you email us, info@trainingaz.com, and we will definitely hook you up with someone to send to. All right. Biggest piece of news I think we have to talk about. I'm going to kind of skip everything else. Look, we did some training. We did some awesome stuff. We shot a lot. But probably the biggest thing that happened last week was this DPS officer gets ambushed by a shitbag, and a passing motorist sees the officer getting stomped. So officer shot and now engaged in an entangled fight.
Yeah, he got shot twice, once in the arm and once in the chest.
Mm-hmm. And which he's going to make full recovery, so good news on that. And passing motorist stops, gets out and tries to verbally handle or maybe even physically handle the situation, realizes it's not happening, goes back to his vehicle, retrieves his firearm, comes back to the situation, and freaking dumps the bad guy, which is a phenomenal story. I love that. So interesting things you can take away from this. What do you think, Mason? What are some lessons to be learned from this?
There are a couple of good people out there.
There's some good people out there, yeah? What are some other good things to learn?
Bring your gun with you.
Bring your freaking gun with you, right? Your gun is no good if it's in the vehicle. I mean, in this case, it actually worked out. You know, the guy had the time and opportunity to leave his vehicle and then come back. But if he wouldn't have been, that would have sucked.
Yeah, and I took a little bit of time to read the whole article the other day because my buddy sent it to me. There was another person there as well who wasn't armed. But as soon as that the armed guy smoke checked the bad dude, they went to the officer's car. And they called up over the radio and gave a situation report like, hey, this is what's happening. This officer's been shot. He's been shot here and here.
Yeah.
We need help. We need like a helicopter or whatever to come get him. They called all that up over the radio. And they have a record of it, of course. You know, and it was very, very good. So even though that other guy didn't have a gun, because they were calm, reasonably calm and collected.
Right.
They knew what to do. So they went, they called it up, and they got help to the guy. Now, it would have been nice, of course, if they had had the training to help him themselves. But you know, at the very least, they knew what to do. They weren't just standing there watching the guy bleed out on the side of the road, you know?
So, I mean, we've talked all the time on this show about the need for trauma first aid and getting all that going with, you know, training and understanding and carrying tools and all that. So, obviously, that would have been helpful here. But more important than the skill to fight, of course, is the will to fight. And these guys obviously showed that. You know, they knew what to do. As you said, they weren't just totally useless. In one case, he was physically able to help the police officer. On the other hand, or on the other guy, he was able to get help to him where they needed it and when they needed it. So a lot of it's just willing to get involved. And like you said, there's still good people out here. So that's a huge takeaway from this.
Yeah, the chief of DPS said that his officer wouldn't be alive if not for the actions of those two people. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's really cool.
They get some kind of award out of it.
So it's a just to read the quick synopsis of it. It's on the way, troopers headed over to this other accident or other situation. On the way, trooper spots a rollover vehicle, stops to investigate. A woman who was believed to have been ejected from the vehicle was later determined to have died at the scene. As the trooper exited his vehicle and began to lay out flares, he gets ambushed. In the initial confrontation, the suspect shoots the trooper in the shoulder and the right chest area at least one time, disabling the use of the trooper's right hand and right arm, which is another great learning point here. You know, you should be able to work your equipment with both hands? Can you get your gun out of the holster? Can you get your equipment accessible with both hands? Or can you only do it with your, you know, strong dominant hand, so to speak? So that's a really good point. And do you keep, you know, like if I was in law enforcement, for example, I would definitely keep other tools that would be useful for, you know, killing bad guys on both sides of my body. It might not necessarily be a gun, but some other kind of tool that would be something accessible.
Lethal.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's just something to think about. The gunman then attacked the trooper with his hands, bashing his head into the pavement. That's when the passing motorist stopped. The trooper says, "Please help me," and asks the uninvolved third party for help. Person retreats back to his vehicle, removes his own weapon from the vehicle, confronts the suspect, says, "Hey, you stop." Suspect refuses, and he dumps him. Fantastic.
Yep, that's a good day. I love hearing stories like that.
We are working very hard on trying to get this guy on the show because it turns out we know a guy who knows a guy, and they know this person, and we're trying to make that happen. So hopefully in the future we'll be able to get – not because I want to ask him about, hey, what was it like? Or I want to find out how he feels about, you know, the capability of training and did he, what did he have and what did he do and what did he use and how did he feel and what did he experience and what was going on before and what was going on after. You know, the actual act itself I'm not particularly concerned about.
No, we're not going to ask what it feels like to kill somebody.
Yeah, we're not 12-year-old kids or retarded, so we don't ask those kinds of questions. But we definitely want to talk about, you know, things leading up to it. We try to interview people, you know, as much as possible who use lethal force in the civilian world because it's just not something you see a lot. You know,
not
we don't
in America.
See enough of, I guess, maybe is the appropriate term. Ooh, I don't know. Ooh. All right, John is gone, but we're still going to do his Redwire gear moment. His Redwire gear moment that he wrote up on the board for us is learn something new every day. And his sale, which starts tomorrow, is 10% off of everything on his website, redwiregear.com. Use code SHOT, capital S, capital H, capital O, capital T. All right, and that's where he'll be. So
we'll take plenty of funny pictures of him, don't worry.
Oh, yeah, we'll make sure we get some funny pictures of John because we do it every year at SHOT. He hates it. We love it. So it's great. All right. Today we have with us Agent Paco from the United States Border Patrol. How you doing, Agent Paco?
Good. Good morning. How you doing? Thanks for inviting me.
Absolutely, man. So I want to get your take on that whole DPS thing. What do you think?
Well, I think it's definitely individuals like that who are appreciated by law enforcement. You know, it's hard for me to comment on something that it's outside my agency right now. But,
sure.
You know, in situations like that, life or death situation, you know, any help does help.
Awesome. All right. So what we're going to be talking about today is about the Border Patrol's mission here in Arizona, about some career opportunities, and a lot about what I kind of experienced when I went on a ride-along with you guys last month. So here's some kind of interesting things that I found just to get things started. First of all, there are way more cool jobs in the Border Patrol than I thought there was. So that was a huge eye-opener to me. I mean, you and I just kind of stand – even before we went on the ride-along, you and I were just kind of standing around talking beforehand about some of the different jobs. So
right. What
most people think of when they think of Border Patrol is somebody in a vehicle, someone on a quad, someone on a horse, whatever, patrolling the border as an agent, and that is, you know, or they're standing at a checkpoint.
Right.
Or obviously, you know, maybe they're working in the office. But there's all this other cool stuff. So let's talk about that first. What are some of the other cool jobs that you think people don't typically know about?
Well, one of the things that we do within the Border Patrol, we have a special operations group. So a special operations group, it's a group of an elite team that the Border Patrol has. One of them is being BORSTAR, Border Patrol Search and Trauma and Rescue. That program is obviously there for – it was originally designated for agents to be able to have agents on duty in an emergency situation, particularly in some of the remote areas of the desert. Sometimes we have a long distance before EMS or anybody can come out there, and having agents as paramedics and be able to conduct combat life-saving rescue operations out in the middle of nowhere is essential for the agency. So this program was created for that. Now, that program has evolved over the years, and in an emergency in the middle of nowhere, you call 911, and we're going to be the ones showing up. You know, when we went out to our ride-along, some of the remoteness we were able to see, that's our everyday, day-to-day operations. You know, we're out there in the middle of nowhere looking for cross-border illegal activity. That could be, you know, a group of individuals trying to cross illegally into this country, or it could be a group of armed bandits or drug smugglers, you know. So those are having essential personnel with that type of training is critical to conduct the Border Patrol's mission. We also have what is called BORTAC team, Border Patrol Tactical Unit. And this unit is particularly more for searching for the real bad guys. You know, this is conducting search warrants. Some of the targets that we have in the Tucson sector is individuals who are, you know, high targets within Department of Homeland Security or Homeland Security Investigations. And we collaborate with those agencies and utilize our assets. You know, we have this group of guys, this group of elite guys, and all they do is train every day. They get paid to train, and then when their phone rings and they're called to conduct a special operation, particularly with armed bandits and things like that, where it's a high risk area or something like that, we're active at the BORTAC team. They rappel down helicopters, you know, and they do a variety of things.
You know, there was one particular group you guys told me about, and it was toward the end, as we were actually coming back into the station at the end of the day. We cruised by a whole bunch of boats. And so I asked you guys, like, what the hell is the boats all about? Why are you Border Patrol and boats? And the other agent we were with actually kind of told us both about some really cool rescue operations that had happened on the water.
Exactly.
Which is something I didn't think of at all.
Our guys, you know, our elite team, is, talking about the special operations group, they're training a variety of things, scuba diving being one of them. They do I remember the story that you know, we heard from Agent Antelone was that we were conducting a rescue operation in collaboration with DPS, mm-hmm. and there was a vehicle that had gone underwater. They were trying to find the vehicle, and they couldn't locate it. And you know, using this boat that we have and a scuba team and one of our canines, we were able to detect, because of the things coming out from the water, you know, bubbling up, the canine was able to detect where the individual was. These guys are trained. We have cadaver dogs. We can search for you know, lost people that have been probably perished out in the desert or in wilderness and things like that. We have you know, tracking dogs that can track individuals. So it's just, you know, Border Patrol and border security is one thing. And a lot of the assets and tools that the agency have sometimes don't make it out to the public. And, you know, we get paid to be out in a 4x4 truck or an ATV or in a horse patrol, patrolling and securing, you know, Americans frontline. We're the rubber meets the road. You know, we're the first line of defense. You know, if there was, for whatever reason, you know, speaking to our audience that is probably military, if there were to be a military action from another country, you know, we're going to be the eyes and ears at the border, mm-hmm. possibly dealing with these incursions. If a situation like that ever happened, you know, we're you know, America's first line of defense. At our homelands.
I really liked a lot of what we were talking about, the different jobs and everything there throughout this whole day. You know, I really liked the diversity of everything. Like, you do, you know, start as an agent.
Right.
But now you do kind of public information stuff.
Right. So we have agents that are doing intelligence-driven operations, too. Mm-hmm. So we have individuals that their job is to obtain information from various sources, whatever that would be. Human intelligence, signals intelligence, or, you know, you name it. They decipher information and create intelligence reports. We have agents that are in prosecutions. You know, every individual that we come in contact in and they're committing a crime, they do face prosecution. We have an agent that is the liaison that goes to court every day and presents our cases in court. We have agents that conduct custodial interviews every day, and their job is to obtain information and obtain you know, information that will allow our agents to, you know, better do our job out in the field. We have agents that are in administrative duties, you know, as maintenance operations and things like that. We have foreign operating bases out in the middle of the desert where those facilities need some type of maintenance, and we have agents assigned to that. We have vehicle control officers that, you know, assure the maintenance of our vehicles is up to date. So, and many of these positions are Border Patrol agents. Obviously, those are detail opportunities, you know, with a year or 6 months, depending on the detail solicitation. But it's not a monotonous job. We have 20,000 agents. And we have a variety of things that our agents can do. You can come and talk to the public like what I get to do for a year and a half now. And then eventually, you know, we all go back to the field. So if, you know, if you think that the Border Patrol is a job where, you know, it might not be for you, you're in for a surprise because there's a variety of things. There's probably tens of positions out there that, you know, agents can do outside of just patrolling the border.
Well, and the other agent we were with, Agent Anzalone, he recently retired after...
He retired in 30
yeah. years?
Yeah.
Right?
20 plus.
20, yeah. It was a freaking long time, right? And wow. I mean, talking to him, I mean, he's been around for a long time. So it was cool to be able to hear a lot of history from him.
Right.
A lot of history about, you know, information, starting up units like BORTAC, for example. He was right. on the front lines of that, so right. to speak, you know, and all these cool things that have developed. And along the way, here's some things that I picked up listening to him talk. One, the Border Patrol has an incredibly low attrition rate.
Right.
Which is interesting because that's not typical with law enforcement. Like in a lot of law enforcement, there's a lot of laterals. There's guys who, mm-hmm. you know, they get on the job for 2-3 years. They find out, hey, being a beat cop's not for me or whatever. They leave. There's a lot of that kind of stuff. But Border Patrol has a relatively low attrition rate. And when you guys were kind of talking about it, it sounded like satisfaction with the job. I mean, one, the Border Patrol agents probably start, I would guess, not knowing everything about it, I would guess Border Patrol starts at higher paying than almost any other typical law right. enforcement job.
So now getting into, you know, our obviously our recruiting piece here. So a salary range, we start at $40,000 a year, mm-hmm. you know, as that's a GS-5. All this information is available in usajobs.gov. You submit an application. Right now they're hiring for Arizona, South Texas, and West Texas. This solicitation is for series GS, you know, GS-5. Promotional potential is a GS-12. So a GS-12 is making some serious cash there. Mm-hmm. You know, without getting into, there's potential within 5 years to make pretty close to 100K with a high school diploma. There's hardly any jobs out there right now that will pay that amount of money just coming out of high school. And we take, you know, a lot of cops out there, they start at, you got to be at least 21. Mm-hmm. You know, with us, you can be 18 and apply. Obviously, veterans is something that we're trying to, you know, recruit more from. And we have certain waivers for veterans that are retiring. You know, you come in at 18, you retire when you're, what, 38, 40. Mm. There are some waivers out there because you have at least have to be 40 years old to become a Border Patrol agent and go through the academy. The academy takes 5 weeks to complete, or I'm sorry, 5 months to complete the academy. You don't have to know Spanish. All you have to do is be able to pass a test that teaches or that addresses the ability to learn Spanish. And you're going to learn basic conversational Spanish as far as giving commands and having people to comply. Like I said, the job obviously has overtime pay. With that, it's an automatic up to an additional 25% on the salary. So you account, like right now, it's a holiday. I'm getting paid holiday pay to come out here and talk to you guys. You have all federal holidays off. If you have military experience, you come in with benefit as far as where it comes occurrence of annual leave and sick leave and stuff like that. Those years count. You have to buy back, obviously, for retirement. You have to buy back those years that you serve in. So a lot of things out there that are beneficial to the agency. You have to have some of the qualifications is you have to be able to pass a background with no criminal history, no felonies. You have to be able to have resided in the U.S. for at least 3 years. There's waivers for military personnel and their dependents. The job, like I said, might require to travel occasionally, not often, but you might be some travel. It's all, you know, domestic. And some of these positions, you don't have to put in. So it's not like in the military where they move you around a lot. I mean, you're off for a station and you're there until the agent decides to rotate around. Mm-hmm. And there are some incentives to rotate around. You know, if our listeners are far away from the southwest border and, you know, they're not, this is not the place that they see themselves, there are opportunities to go to the northern border and things like that. So we have Border Patrol agents all over the country.
I got a buddy in Sweetwater, Montana, works for the Border Patrol. Transferred up there after serving with a local sheriff's department. Transferred into the BP. Mm-hmm. You know, did his FTO stuff and everything, you know, down south or down southwest. And now patrols in the summertime, springtime, or summertime, fall time on a horse. Right. And then fall time, winter time on a snowmobile. Patrols the northern border. And he does, you know, he lives the same hunting, camping, outdoor lifestyle he lived here. I mean, to me, like, that is not what I think of when I think of Border Patrol. But right. There's all these really cool opportunities. And one note, something that you told me that was interesting about veterans is if you currently have a secret or greater security clearance, then your background process is faster, you said, right?
It is. And then I think legislation.
Normally that could be like a 2-year process potentially.
Legislation was just recently passed too in regards to our polygraph. I think if you have some sort of security clearance with mm-hmm. the military or civilian, there is a waiver now that applicants can apply for the polygraph. Hmm.
And that gets you through that lengthy background process right. that much faster.
Exactly.
That way you don't have to wait for so long. Because I know guys.
That typically takes the most time out of background check is right. your poly and everything.
Polygraph.
1500 questions or
right.
whatever.
And then one of the things, you know, with military is you move it around a lot. Mm. They have to talk to everybody right. that you lived along the way. So if you already have that background, and it's, you know, I think every 5 years they redo background for military. It's been a while since I served. But
yeah, I think it's 10 years for a secret and 5 years for a TS.
Right. That's so, you know, if it's still within that time frame, you know, I'm sure I don't have the specifics on that, but some of that information can be gathered from DOJ and over to Office of Personnel Management.
Well, I know from my experience, they work really well with people in the reserves too, because there are several people that at my unit that are Border Patrol agents.
Right.
You know, so they live down in Tucson and they get their time off, of course, to come do their one weekend a month, and they've never had any.
Right. So that's another great advantage. It's a good thing you brought that up, because the Border Patrol pays leave for you know, reservists to go out and do time. So in a way, you're collecting your check from the reserves, and then you're still collecting your check from the Border Patrol. I think there's a limit on how much leave you can receive for a calendar year or a fiscal year, and then that resets every year thereafter. Unfortunately, if you get deployed for longer than, you know, the normal two week a year, then I think in that you'll go and live without pay. But your job will be back. And
yeah, you know, I mean, that's pretty standard. Most agencies won't pay you for the whole time you're gone.
Right. Absolutely. But at least we pay up. I think it's up to 30 days a year. I'm not sure. I'll have to research a little more on that. But they'll give some leave to, you know, if your location where individuals drill is far away, you'll get a travel day paid by U.S. Border Patrol.
Nice.
So another cool thing about all the different jobs that are out there, and you kind of talked about the special operations concept of that, is that mm-hmm. all that great training, mm-hmm. also if you're still currently serving in the military, like in the reserves or guard or something like that, of course is that much better training that you're getting
right.
Border Patrol to now potentially use in your other right. job. And you know, especially if you're in one of the military special operation reserve or National Guard groups, mm-hmm. which they do have, then, you know, that gives you that much more training. And special operations of Border Patrol, as I found out on this ride along, was a lot like special operations in the military from the standpoint of you're going to have guys who, you know, one agent may be scuba certified, you know, swift water rescue certified, you know, off-road vehicle certified, you know, certified on several different firearms,
right.
You know, air crew certified, all right. this like a normal special operations
right.
guy would be, because he may be forced into one of those positions
right.
at any point in time, depending on, you know, what the, you know, what the job called for.
And the selection course for those individuals is just like being part of special operations in the military mm-hmm. also. So it's a selected course. Mm-hmm. Where they get pretty much kind of similar to what you know, the military goes through. They go through an academy where they don't know when they're gonna graduate. Mm-hmm. There's definitely sleep deprivation and things like that to go through that. But this is just for the special operators, not for the Border Patrol agent. Mm-hmm. The academy is, if somebody went through, like myself, I went through the Navy, you could say that's one of the most relaxed boot camps there is out there. It wasn't as hard as it could have been for somebody just walking into Border Patrol Academy, just off, you know, the streets.
Now, one thing I want to talk about that was really interesting, especially since I got a really great perspective, man. First of all, I had a great time on that ride along. I want to thank you again because it was a great experience. I met a lot of cool people. We had some cool stuff, you know, that we got to see, and it was cool to have both you and Agent Anzalone with us because, you know, he was just about to retire. You're not certainly new to the job, but you're newer than he was.
Yes, definitely.
And you both had kind of different perspectives.
Right.
But even though you both kind of came from different backgrounds, mm-hmm. you know, you came from different lifestyles and all that, you guys both had this really interesting perspective on kind of the agent's individual mission in the Border Patrol. And what I mean by that is you said something that I actually wrote down in my notes here, and it's that, and I got to find it here real quick so I make sure I don't screw it up. The Border Patrol is constantly trying to protect humanity.
Right.
And I thought that was really different, I guess, than maybe what I thought. You think Border Patrol, like, clench the border, and of course, with our new election, there's a build the wall, and then there's this other crowd who's like, oh, you guys hate Mexicans or whatever. Like, there's this really diverse kind of idea about what's happening on the border, and yet when I'm sitting with Border Patrol agents going, hey, what are your thoughts on protecting the border? And you guys say Border Patrol is constantly trying to protect humanity. I mean, that to me is that's a whole other side of the job. We've kind of talked about some of the you know, high-speed, low-drag stuff you can do, mm-hmm. but the real humanity part of the job.
So here's the thing that probably gets under-publicized, and is how much assets we have to preserve human life. One of the things that we as an agency have recognized is that it shouldn't be a death sentence, regardless of what the individual's intentions are to come across illegally. It shouldn't be a death sentence for somebody to come across the border. And the agency has allocated resources in some of the remote areas of the desert. We have about 32 rescue beacons. So a rescue beacon is, think of it, of a tower out in the middle of the desert with a beacon of hope. You know, it's got a blue light. We call it the blue light of life. And it's got a red button in the middle. He's got instructions in English, Spanish, and Tahana Odom, which is one of the native languages on the reservation down there. Anybody that's on distress can come up and press that button, regardless of their immigration status. We're going to render aid. And if the individual is illegally present, he's going to get arrested, obviously. But if it's a U.S. citizen that is lost or a camper that is lost out there, we're gonna render aid and provide, you know, we have paramedics like we talked about. We have EMTs, as you know, that might not necessarily be board star agents, but we have EMTs that can, you know, give a field IV out in the middle of nowhere. And we have done that. Another thing is when somebody's out there and calls 911, Every 911 call routed and is determined that it's from a border crosser or from somebody out in the middle of the desert gets routed to a Border Patrol joint intake center right here in Tucson. And from there, our rescue is coordinated. You know, if we're able to determine the individual's location, we will send someone out there. So last week, it's a perfect example. We had a Honduran national stranded in the Babaquiri Mountains, which was the mountains range we were nearby.
Okay.
When we were on our ride along.
Those are some rough looking mountains.
Rough looking mountains. Yes. Mm-hmm. So this Honduran national broke his ankle and was in the mountaintop, thousands of feet up. Borstar conducted an interview on the individual, and they were able to kind of pinpoint down where this guy was at. It was a 2-day operation. DPS went down there. They couldn't extract him out, you know, because of the ravine he was in. It was so steep. It was 400 from the top. It was the closest we can get to him, and 100 feet from the bottom. There was no way we can get to him. There was a lot of assets there. It was about, I think, 250-something man-hours and about 40-something helicopter hours mm-hmm. that were put just to save this one individual's life. And that's stuff that gets under-publicized and under-advertised. You know, yes, our mission is to secure the border and to identify all, you know, incursions made between the ports of entry. But, you know, part of our mission out there, because of the areas we are, we're the first responders. Somebody calls 911, rollover accident. You know, we're out there patrolling these roads, rollover accident. If we don't show up, you know, it takes a long while for local resources to get out there. And we'll deploy those assets because, number one, we're there to secure America, but we're also there to protect the public and the communities that we serve.
I think that level of compassion, I have to say, was something that like I didn't really expect.
Right.
You know, as we're driving along, of course, I'm thinking just based on my what I do for a living and what I've done in my life, I'm like, oh, kill bad guys, right? Border patrol, find bad guys, kill bad guys, keep other bad guys from coming across the border. Like that's what I think.
Yeah, part of the reality is that we come in contact with a lot of individuals that obviously are fleeing violence. A lot of individuals that are in a way, you know, looking for a better life. You know, unfortunately, they're not educated enough to understand that there is a legal way to do things. They're put themselves at the hands of smugglers, and smugglers are there for profit. Mm-hmm. It's not like it was once was where mom and pop operations, you know, now everything is paid into these cartels or transnational criminal organizations. Mm-hmm. They're there for mm-hmm. profit. You know, they're there to exploit these immigrants. And a harsh reality is that when we come in contact with them, many of them are about to die. I had people that have died in my hands, you know, as a Border Patrol agent. That was within a week. I was out there with my, you know, FTU unit, and a guy tried to wave us down. And one of the things that he did while he's waving us down, he falls to his death, you know, on a stiff cliff. We go out there. We try to resuscitate him. I'm giving him CPR. Me and my partners are giving him CPR. We call EMT. We're trying to save this guy's life. And he literally died on our hands, you know. Whatever circumstances he had to come across the border, you know, is sad, but it's a reality. It's part of what we do. You know, we're still human beings. Yeah, we're there to get bad guys and this and that. But a lot of times we come in contact with individuals that may not be bad guys. You know, they're just uneducated and don't understand that there is a process. And many times we're there not only to make an arrest, but to make them understand, listen, you know, we understand you still committed a crime. Yeah, we understand that you know, your circumstances and this and that and another. And because I've talked to hundreds of people and I've heard all these stories and all the reasons that they have for doing this. And I was like, listen, there is a way. I'm still going to enforce the law. Yeah, but, you know, they can say, oh, but you're Mexican or whatever. You look Mexican or whatnot. I was like, hey, regardless of what it is, I'm wearing a uniform. I'm wearing a badge. And I swore to uphold the law. And I'm going to enforce the law that I swore to uphold. And I'll continue to do that. And unfortunately, right now, we'll have to send you back. And that is a reality. You know, it's a harsh reality. And sometimes, you know, different, you know, we have close to 20,000 agents in the Border Patrol. Every agent deals with certain circumstances a little different. I'm just giving you how I deal with the circumstances that I come across. And, you know, Agent Ancelon has conducted probably hundreds of rescues and probably way more than anybody here in the Tucson sector because of he started the program. Mm-hmm. So he's seen a lot, you know, and somebody like that can tell you, you know, that's something that he gets under advertised and over published.
And it was interesting. I remember I asked you too, as we were riding along, and I was kind of like, hey, you know, you're Hispanic. I see a lot of Hispanic agents. Like, how does that work? You know, and that was kind of a question I've always kind of had. You know, you go through and you're like, this is like a lot of Hispanic agents, like keeping Hispanics. That didn't make sense. And then when it really made sense and you explained it to me kind of like you just did, where it really started making sense is where you told me, like, hey, I grew up, you know, on border areas, and I saw agents doing their jobs, not as these hard-knuckled type, you know, enforcers of the law, but as compassionate guys, and that you wanted to be a part of that. And I think a lot of the Hispanic agents probably come from that same environment.
And for somebody like myself that grew around the border, and I saw the impact that these criminals have made in communities, how difficult they make it for people to live in these communities. You know, I wanted to be part of the solution. You know, I wanted to be put myself in a position where I could make a difference. You know, I that was one of the reasons I joined the military. You know, I was in college at the time of 2001, and my brother was in the Navy, and, you know, 2001 came along, and I felt the need to sign up, you know, in September. So, you know, I failed my call at that time. And you know, it's an attractive job because there's very few jobs in these border communities, low-income areas, border towns, people that live on both sides of the border. There's very limited jobs for individuals like myself, you know, where If I wanted to live away from the border or make a living comparable to what I'm making now, I'll probably have to move away from the border. And, you know, as a GS-12, you know, we're making some pretty good cash. And if people are out there, like I said before, interested in signing up, you know, you log into usajobs.gov, type in on the keyword search Border Patrol. And, you know, if you feel like it's something that you're interested in, if you're listening to this podcast now, sign up and see where it takes you. You know, it's a great career. I recommend it to anybody, whether they were in the military or not. You know, if they feel a need, that law enforcement is the way to go. And like I said before, there's many different opportunities, plainclothes assignments to where they're working disrupt operations, kind of like narcotics agents. We have task forces that agents go out and work with different entities of the government, like the DEA, FBI. We have task forces like that. I mean, it's a variety of things. Obviously, you got to do your time, just like anything, you know. You have to do your time. You have to go to the academy. You have to be a trainee for a couple of years. And then after that, you know, positions start opening up.
There was some really cool stuff that we experienced, too, on this ride-along that that I think, again, kind of changed the way I saw Border Patrol. And, you know, we got out to this one particular area. We hopped down. We start looking through this wash. Mm. And this whole idea of tracking men starts to develop, right?
Right.
Whereas, you know, again, I've always kind of like Border Patrol, you know, it's like at nighttime, you use a knot or lights or something. I think about the military way of doing things, right? I don't think of like you guys are there, you know, like the agent we were with goes, yeah, you know, through this area every whatever. I can't remember exactly what he said. It was like every Thursday or whatever, you know, there's these – we noticed that there's these different tracks. Someone had dumped some clothes recently. You know, we're looking at that. We're looking for recent tracks. And this whole idea kind of is like, oh, this is kind of interesting. And he starts talking about you're kind of teaming up with other agents. Like you're getting off shift, briefing the next agent coming on shift. Hey, here's the traffic I saw. You might want to check this area for tracks. And, you know, how people coming across the border, be they smugglers or illegals, immigrants or whatever – as they're coming across, they get to know your guys' schedule. So how you'll mix up the schedule. Like, oh, yeah, you know, normally this guy for a week, he'll drive by this spot at, let's say, 5 p.m. every day until they get used to that. And all of a sudden, boom, he shows up at, you know, 8 a.m. or 9 a.m. And he'll catch them. And that's a really interesting part of the job, this kind of psychologically tracking thing. And that was just the beginning. Then we go out to this other desert spot where there had been some activity. Mm-hmm. And we're sitting there, or we drive past, and you know, of course, you guys are seeing way more than I'm seeing. So we're driving with the windows down, just like enjoying the breeze. You guys are like on the job, And we stop, and there's some tracks, and we start looking at these tracks, and we see where the tracks have, you know, crossed the fence, and we've seen where the tracks are different. We've seen exactly where they crossed the fence and where they were going, and you guys start doing this whole man tracking thing, which is this whole other aspect of the job that I think would really appeal to people, where you start trying to get inside the minds of these people. I remember like Agent Anzalone asked me, all right, so, you know, take a look at this track. When was it made? I'm like, I don't have no idea. You know, he's like, okay, well, look at what's across it. There was some little quail tracks across it. So I was like, all right, well, when do quail move? Well, typically, you know, around after sunrise. Okay, so then these tracks were made before sunrise, which means when it was dark. So let's try to figure out which direction these guys were headed. What can you see in the horizon that you could see it dark? And we look over there and there's this radio antenna a few miles away. Mm-hmm. It's a nice bright blinking beacon. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, if I had to go someplace at night, I would probably use that as a waypoint, you know, or at least some kind of landmark. And so – and, you know, we went into more depth than that out in the field. But that whole idea of tracking people and getting psychological about it and even launching these day-long things. Like I remember he was telling me about a thing that happened recently, I believe, with some BORTAC guys. We're tracking this group of about eight smugglers through this mountain range, and how it took them like 7 or 8 days to finally catch them, because as one agent would get off shift, he'd pass the intel to the next guy, and then he would try to jump ahead of these guys. And you're trying to outthink people, you're trying to outsmart people, you're trying to get in their heads. You know, you're tracking men, and that's a really cool part of the job that I felt was like, that's something that's really appealing.
And then when you get close to the group and you finally make that interdiction, it's very rewarding. Mm-hmm. It's also when we have, you know, whether it's through a sensor activation or camera activity, you're responding sometimes to the unknown. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you get an adrenaline dump because you don't know what's going to happen. You know, you see them or you hear them approaching, you hear them coughing, you hear them walking. They don't know that you know, obviously the way we work things is a little different. We conceal ourselves and we wait for them, and we try to put ourselves as much as we can in a position of advantage. I track groups where, you know, gone for 7-8 miles, and in some spots where the footprints were good, we will try to jog to try to gain ground on them. Mm. And then sometimes we will be literally like looking down at the ground right in front of us. And then by the time we make that interdiction in this particular incident, it was in the thicket brush. I mean, we ended up getting all scratched up with zero apprehensions. You know, eventually we got other asses to help us out, but the original encounter was, you know, something hard to describe because of this environment we were in. The terrain out here, you know, it's very rugged, very remote. And in some areas, it's very exciting too. So there's a lot of activity right now where our agents stay busy. We, in the Tucson sector, we account for about 50% of all marijuana that comes across the border between ports of entry. That's, you know, in 2013, we seized over 1 million pounds of marijuana. Last year, we seized, I think it was in the 700s figure. So we're coming across a lot of narcotics. We obviously, there's a lot more activity in the Rio Grande Valley right now in Texas in relation to immigrants coming across the border, but we still have border crosses in our area. So in Arizona, if people want to apply, we're taking applicants at various locations, and so in Texas. It's a very exciting career. I can't stress enough how much I've, like you said, I've learned from it too. One of the things that I didn't know is the many details that we have within the agency. So if being out in the field gets rough on you, you can take a little break and find a good detail where you can come and talk. You could be a recruiter. We have recruiters that go out to different school events at the universities, at the job fairs and things like that across the nation. They do recruiting. Go to the academy. You know, we have our instructors, all Border Patrol agents. We, for the law portion of the class, we have lawyers teaching the law enforcement. But we have also, if individuals are good with firearms, you know, our firearms instructors are all Border Patrol agents. And, you know, they go through to very advanced training. I think the Border Patrol pistol team actually wins national competitions.
They do very well.
Yeah, they do
very
well.
Yeah, I hear about them often. Yeah. Now, and that's another cool aspect about kind of what I learned is, even as an individual agent, so like you said, you're going to be a trainee for the first few years, you're going to be out in the field, but even as that individual agent, there's still quite a bit of freedom in how you go
exactly
about your job. Like, you know, we were in this sector where at one point, you know, I get shown a map that's like, well, here's our sector. And it's like, holy crap, you know, mm-hmm. that's a lot more ground than, let's say, your typical beat cop has to cover in a city or something right. like that. So what's cool about it is you kind of get to plan out how you do it.
Exactly.
And based on your strengths or what you maybe even just like doing, maybe you like going up to, you know, an OP and just sitting there
yep.
and observing that's with spotting scopes and binos yeah. and stuff. Right. Maybe you're like, hey, I'm in a hiking mood today and I want to go check, you know, all these different waypoints, or I want to go check all these areas mm-hmm. that are known dump points or something like
right.
that. You're like, to hell with it. I'm kind of in a driving mood or whatever. So I'm just going to go cruise around
right.
to these different areas. I'm going to go talk to people. I'm going to go, you know, make contact with the locals. So
right.
what I like about that is, unlike being a city cop who is kind of a little bit more restrained on how they're going to be doing their job unless
right.
they're in a,
they get
in
calls,
a different thing.
They got to respond to calls.
Yeah, they're responding to calls. They're typically in their vehicle. They're, you know, I mean, they don't really have a – as an agent out in the field, I mean, to me, like, I'm a big outdoorsman. I love to hunt. I love to hike. I love to do all that. And I think, man, what a perfect job for that kind of passion. Because I can. I'm like, hey, you know, maybe I busted up my ankle yesterday and I'm just right. kind of in a driving and sitting and observing mood today. Or, you know, I'm trying to track this one group of individuals. So I might be hiking for the next few days and coordinating with other agents. And there's just this whole kind of big picture concept to me
right.
to being an agent that's not just, I'm going to go sit in a car and drive around.
Right, right.
Because that's definitely not what it's about.
So that's one of the advantages of working in Arizona is that we have very large, vast amounts of terrain. You know, we have, like, where I patrol down in Ajo, just south of here. Ajo, Arizona, it's a, you know, a small station south of Phoenix going towards Rocky Point. And we're in charge of, I think, 93 miles of border down there. And it's border that is remote. I mean, we patrol in some of the best locations where you see a lot of Arizona is beautiful. You know, we see a lot of mountain ranges. We see a lot of wildlife we come in contact with. A lot of things that, you know, sometimes we even find artifacts from, you know, ancient artifacts from the Native Americans that resided in these areas. You know, we GPS them, we contact the local tribe and then through our public lands liaison. That's another position that we have, a public lands liaison agent that is in charge to, you know, be a steward of the land and educate agents and educate the public about our efforts done to, you know, reserve and leave a better place than it was before, so that we're not randomly, you know, making incursions and possibly destroying a natural habitat or an ancient artifact.
Now, there was something that came up as we were driving along, headed from one location to another. There was a story that Agent Anzalone told us that I, again, just kind of really changed the way that I was thinking about how agents do their job. And we were talking. I can't remember the context and how we got started in the conversation, but he ends up telling the story about, you know, he'd apprehended this person who was, you know, here illegally and was definitely doing something they weren't supposed to be doing. And he had, you know, brought him up into the front seat of his truck and handcuffed him up to like the kind of, you know, oh shit handle, so to speak, in the car, right? The handle you used to hold on to or get in out of or whatever. And then, you know, shared his lunch with him.
Right.
Because the dude was hungry, you know, and he's like,
I've done that too.
And so. I'm like, dude, again, I got to tell you, it totally changed the way that I saw.
When you,
like,
when,
you what? Like me, I'm just like, kill bad guys. Like, how, yeah. So how would you want to share your
when
lunch?
When we come in contact with people, they're in pretty bad shape.
Yeah.
They're in pretty bad shape. And at that time, they don't see us as a law enforcement entity. At that time, they see us as a rescue, as a lifesaver. Because I've heard from people, you know, I was seeing my kids, you know, as I was walking in the desert. You know, individuals become delirious. Mm-hmm. They become disoriented. Dehydration is probably one of the worst ways to go out because of the way your body starts to shut down, your kidneys start to shut down. You know, you get disoriented. You don't know where you're at. You start hallucinating. You start seeing things. And I've come in contact with people that I've had to literally share my lunch. And I've been in situations where I've been so busy at work that I forget to eat. And then by the end of the day, I come home with my lunch and my wife's like, nobody wanted your food. You know, at least give it to somebody. Let's just not make, you know, let it go to waste. But that's just one of the things that it's unheard of. You know, yeah. It's
I just think things like that aren't getting publicized, right? Like you were talking
just like,
about
before. Just like when I'm sure when you deployed and I have friends that deployed, they were out there and, you know, you see the kids and, you know, they're selling you DVDs. They're selling you this or. You know, kids come up and you have a bag of candy and you give a candy per kid. You know, that's it's part of who we are as human beings. You know, we're there to in the Border Patrol standpoint, we're there to serve the public. You know, we're stewards of the land. We're there to secure the border. But as a secondary job, we're still human beings.
It's that humanity, I think, that keeps you sane in a job like this. And I think that part of that is part of the reason that you guys were talking about having such a low attrition rate. And having agents that want to stay on the job and go from here to there and transfer to these different stations and do these right. different jobs as they want to, but is because they're this humanity part of the job keeps them totally sane. And right. I think that, you know, in our training classes, we're always talking about not projecting your reality onto other people. How I live, think, grew up, experienced whatever is not how everybody lived, thinks, experienced, grew up, et cetera. So, like, you know, when we're handling potentially violent criminals or when you're handling someone who's broken into your home
Definitely.
Or you're handling something,
right.
you can't project who you are onto them. They
right.
are not going to react the same way you might react. And I think that's an important thing to think about as we're looking at, you know, some of the politics and stuff along the border, but just the humanity along the border is we can't project our reality on these people coming across the border. In my experience, I've done a lot of hunting and a lot of camping and stuff down on the border areas. And I've come in contact with at least a handful of groups of, you know, illegal immigrants. All they ever want is to be treated like humans. I mean, honestly, that's what they want. Because like you said, they've been treated so poorly most of the time that it's like they want water, they want some help. That's what they want, you know, because their life has not been our life. I think sometimes we forget as Americans how blessed we are. Our poorest person in America is still the richest person in most other countries that are underdeveloped, right? So it's like – we can't forget that humanity side. And that was something I really, really appreciated and I really took away from the ride-along was how much of that is present
right.
in an agent's everyday life. Like, look, let's make no bones about it. You guys carry guns, right?
Right.
And you're trained how to use them. And you know right. how to kill bad guys. And there's no doubt about that. Border right. Patrol gets that done enough times every year to prove that they can do it. That being said, there's still this whole other humanity side. You know, I remember I brought up and I know officially you can't make any comments on this, but, you know, I brought up like the whole wall thing, like, oh, well, do you think politically we should right. build a wall or whatever? And mm-hmm. and one of the things you guys brought up was, look, a wall is just a thing, right? But the problem isn't the wall or the lack of a wall. The problem is this infrastructure that's lacking. You know,
so one of the things that we see across the border is we see the need of improvement. There's definitely ways to improve and become obviously, it's hard for us to measure on the unknowns. Mm. You know, how, you know, we like to say that we're pretty effective in, mm. with what we have. The border looked very different 10 years ago. The border is going to look different 10 years from now. And we're going to adapt. We're going to embrace the changes. Whatever changes come, whether it's, you know, improved infrastructure along the border, whether it's that roads or a fence or a better wall, for the sake of using the word, you know, the border is going to look different 10 years from now. But the Border Patrol will still be there. There'll still be a necessity to ensure that everybody coming across is accounted for. And for those who don't want to follow the law, we're going to be there to make an arrest and an interdiction. If they're in an emergency situation, we're going to render aid. We still have to do our job, regardless of, you know, who says what or what their intentions are. And we understand that. As agents in the field, boots on the ground, we understand that. And, you know, we all wear the same badge. And when we get that badge, you know, we give an oath of office. When we get that oath of office, you know, we take it very serious. And our motto in the U.S. Border Patrol is honor first. Above all, honor first. What does that mean? For me, that means that I take my job with honor. You know, I take that oath of office with honor. And once you lose your honor, it's like losing your integrity. You know, every agent is embedded that at the academy. You know, we are there because having honor is doing the right thing when no one is looking. And when we're out in the middle of nowhere, sometimes we're out by ourselves. And sometimes you have to do your job whether someone is looking or not. And that's why that term comes from, you know, honor first. And then we take pride in that, and we look for candidates that are in that when we're doing our panel interviews. You know, we have a very rigorous recruiting process because it takes about 217 applicants for one graduate at the academy.
217 for one?
For one. Wow. And that was the last numbers that I saw. There's a lot of factions that come into that, but you know, when you look at those numbers, that's a very high number. Mm-hmm. You know, for one trainee graduate at the academy, it took 217 people that went into USA Jobs and submitted an application. So we take pride in that because we recruit the best and we want the best, because at the end of the day, that individual is the one that's going to have my back. Regardless of race, color, where he comes from, where he is, he's going to have my back, wherever that individual comes from. And I expect that individual to do his job.
So what are some other things in regards to kind of what you see incorrect perceptions, I guess, of the public and Border Patrol? Because I know you've probably heard all kinds of stuff. I mean, what are right. some things that are kind of some myths maybe in the last few minutes we have here that you want to kind of correct, that maybe you think the average general public has a perception in a certain way about what the Border Patrol does or what their job is or politically what they are or whatever, and how it really is?
Well, I know that politics plays a big part of our job, you know, and one of the things that we tell individuals is when we come in contact with people that want to debate us, you know, one of our jobs in the public information office is to go to humanitarian groups and have a dialogue. But sometimes, having that dialogue may not necessarily change that individual. You know, they have a predetermined mentality on the way they think, and it's going to be hard for us to persuade them. But at least make them understand that we're doing our job. You know, if the current law or the current policies or procedures that we have in the way we operate, don't bring it to us. Bring it to the policymakers, to the people that can change the law. We're there to enforce the law that is currently on the books. And if somebody comes across the border, they're going to get arrested. You know, it's still a crime. There's no amnesty. There's no false. If somebody comes across the border between ports of entry without presenting themselves, they're still committing a crime, and they're still going to get arrested, regardless of their claims or circumstances. And that is something that some people may not know. You know, it's still a crime. There is no amnesty. And if people know of someone, you know, and it's hard for our audience because our audience is mostly veterans and military law enforcement. But if they know of someone that wants to do that, remind them, you know, it's still a crime. There's no amnesty out there. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to get arrested. And if you don't like the way the Border Patrol works, take it up to the policymakers. They're there to do their job. And you know, if people out there are listening to what I do for a living as far as, you know, enforcing immigration and they have a problem with the way we work, we're still going to do our job. Regardless of what people say about us and judge us and criticize us, we're still going to do our job and we're still going to arrest anybody coming across the border. And again, if somebody is in need, we're still going to respond too, regardless of their immigration status and regardless of their situation.
So anything else that you can think of that you kind of think is a common
misconception? We're hiring. Log into usajobs.gov, submit an application. You have to at least be 18 years old, be able to have a clean background. There's going to be the application process is about 18 months for, you know, somebody just off the streets. It seems like there's some waivers and incentives for veterans. You know, we're on the Veterans Recruiting Act, I think, that was recently passed. We're trying to recruit veterans. There's some waivers in there for expediting that process on some of the background things and things like that. And very rewarding career. GS-5, you know, you're going to start making around $40,000 a year. And, you know, basic requirement is a year work experience and 18 years old.
So that's a way, like as you said earlier, that's way more open than it is for A, most federal law enforcement, and B, even your local law enforcement requires you to be 21.
Requires you to be 21 to apply. So to be a peace officer. Yeah.
Now, as as someone who's involved kind of in media and training and all that, I was given the opportunity when I contacted you guys to go for a ride along, which is a really cool experience. When I was first looking into law enforcement, you know, years ago when I was going through college and everything, I went and did some ride alongs with local PD, which was a pretty open thing. It was pretty much if you were an applicant, you could go for a ride-along. Mm-hmm. What is the Border Patrol's kind of general rules of who can go on a ride-along?
Okay, so on a ride-along, it has to be obviously a media or a student that is doing some sort of work related to immigration, Border Patrol, things like that.
Okay.
For our regular citizens, we host citizens' academies. Every station along the border in a way or fashion, have a citizens academy. Get with your local station. You can contact us at the Tucson sector at 520-748-3210. That's 520-748-3210. And we'll get you an information regarding the closest citizens academy. And the citizens academy is once a week. It's usually on the evenings or afternoons for 4 to 6 hours a week. For 6 weeks, and right there you'll get to see some of the things that you did. We're not gonna go on a ride along, but sure. You'll get presentations, you'll get some tours along the border, the ports of entry, depending on where the academy is. You might get to see firsthand and see some of the equipment and tools that we use to do our job.
So there's even more opportunities for people to go get involved, even if they don't go on full ride-along or they don't necessarily want to be hired by the Border Patrol. They just want to go see more about what we're talking about.
The
they
Citizens
can check
Academy.
Out the Citizens Academy. Mm-hmm. Okay. And is there a cost associated with that? That's free.
No, it's free. It's open to the public, and they have to be at least 18 years old.
Cool. And so if you're interested in getting more involved with Border Patrol and you're looking at jobs, usajobs.gov.
usajobs.gov.
Cool. All right, you guys. Thank you, Agent Paca, for coming
Thank
on
you.
The show.
Thanks for having us over.
Oh, absolutely, man. I really appreciate it. All right. Mason, anything to add, buddy? You've been quiet over there in the corner.
I'm just gathering information.
All right, guys. We are proud members of the Heroes Media Group. Make sure you check out the other shows that are on the network with us. Of course, we're the best one, but there are some other shows out there about stuff and things. We are coming to you from the official Wilderness Tactical Studio next week.
Woo, the epic post-shot
show. Epic.
review.
SHOT Show report. We will be reporting on things that were cool, things that were uncool, things that happened. Of course, we will be reporting on how many operator points we each scored.
Yeah, who wins? We'll report the winner.
I think current is the current, what am I looking for? Record still 26? Is this 26 points? Is that still
when
the current?
When was that?
Record?
Wait, that was last year?
I think it was the year before, 26, which is like, that's like unobtainium. Yeah, I think. I don't even know how they – I don't even remember how it was.
Really, he probably read our list and
they probably then dressed accordingly.
He's like, all right, let's do it.
So we'll be reporting on our operator points and, of course, our good SHOT Show report next week. So look forward to that. Until next time, stay aware, stay safe, and train hard. You've been listening to The Arms Room.